crazy.
And I may be crazy. I'm Floyd J. Winters, and welcome to the Morning Edge. And here is Augie.
Good morning, Tampa Bay. I tell you what, we've got some agendas coming up for this state and for the country, and of course, whichever side of the group you're on, they're going to run tomorrow night, Thursday night. I shouldn't date this show that way, but in any event, we're going to have candidates. Tom Friedman says there's a question to ask. I'll tell you what that question is. But Floyd has an interesting thing that he's come up with. It's something I've been proposing for a long, long time. That is open primaries. And a group has presented this idea is about to present this idea to Florida's electorate. So you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, the problem with our primaries right now is we tend to elect the most radical people from both parties. The primaries are basically voted on by only Republicans in the Republican primary, only Democrats in a Democratic primary. And they tend to just appeal to the base and not to the moderate average individual. And people are becoming very disenchanted with the political system right now. There is a large third-party base or independent base that's not really allowed to vote in the Democratic primary or in the Republican primary. And consequently, what we tend to do is just elect people from the extremes, so extreme that they do not work with each other. Congress is a failure, and our country has severe problems right now because of our lack of our legislatures to do anything, to work together, to make compromises, to make deals and arrange things. Now, a number of states have gone through and have developed open primaries where you can vote for Republican or Democrat, especially if you're independent. You get a chance to vote in the initial election, the pre-general election. And this is a neat thing. Washington State, California, Louisiana, they currently have these open primaries. And Florida's trying to get that. The advantage of it has a number of different situations. The first thing is you have less of an extreme candidate. You have a person that has to run to the middle. That is, try to appeal to the average Floridian, not to the wealthiest Republican or the wealthiest Democrat, not the person with the most extreme views. But if you're going to have both Democrats and Republicans vote for you.
So you're saying, excuse me, Floyd, let me interject here a little bit. You're saying that you're going to get moderate candidates as opposed to extremes?
Well, you have to, because you have to appeal to both parties in order to win the primary.
But if your parties, let's just go back one more step then. If you have an open primary, does that mean that a Republican can vote in a Democratic primary and vice versa?
Absolutely. And that's
so what do you think that's going to do?
It means that the voters count.
We will not stop having those individual primaries by party, which are not mutually exclusive to that party and the registration, right?
Okay, just...
Try that one more time?
Yeah.
All right. If the parties continue to put up their primaries for Democrats or for Republicans...
No, it doesn't work that way. In this particular context, and there's an amendment proposed right now for Florida, and basically you put a candidate up, but then anybody can vote for them. You may have an R, you may have a D after your name, but the fact is, even if you have an R on the ballot, a Democrat can vote for you. So if you want to win the primary and come in the top two to go into the general election, you have to appeal to both parties. You have to appeal to your whole constituency.
You have to, well, let's use Donald Trump as an example.
Okay.
Well, I mean, there's polling out there that says he appeals to Democrats too. So in a sense, that's what he's doing. Some people could argue. The point is that my question really goes to, are the various parties going to still put up their primaries with the recommendation that only you Republicans vote in the Republican primary and vice versa with the Democrats? And there is that independent group that might take sides and still be able to vote in. As an example of how this worked actually, when the large middle group was blocked out in Sarasota 2 years ago, John Faxon, the Republican, ran against Kathy Dent for supervisor of election, a hugely important seat in Sarasota. In fact, in any county, when the supervisor of election job comes up, it's politically the most powerful job that's out there. In any case, Kathy Dent, the sitting supervisor, refused to allow the ballot. There's a stipulation that if no Democrats are running, then against the sitting supervisor, she's a Republican, then they think should go to all candidates. All people should have been able to do that. Lisa Carlton, who was at the time a sitting representative, lectured Kathy to make sure that this election was made that way. By having a false Democrat sign in on paper run as a wild card, that nullified the rule, therefore allowing it to be a closed party election within the Republican Party. And so Lisa Carlton made the point further at the time, this is at Tiger Bay down in Sarasota, that you are damaging democracy, Kathy. You're limiting it to 43% of the registered voters, all Republicans, and only Republicans were able to vote in that election, and Kathy Dent was reelected. Kathy didn't want Thaxton to allow for Democrats or independents to run to vote, because they would have voted for him and not her, and she knows that, and she knew that. And so she continues to sit. So this is one of the abuses that have gone on, and you're looking at, I think, a real correction here. So that's why I bring this up as an example.
Yeah, Kathy Dent's an interesting person. Back in 2008, there was the... Actually, 2006, there was the question of disappeared ballots. What was it? 18,000 votes disappeared from a Democratic, largely Democratic district.
Yep.
Not from the candidates so much, but largely a Democratic district. That 18,000 mm-hmm. votes disappeared when there was less than something like 380-some votes separated Vern Buchanan from Christine Jennings, and yet 18,000 of them disappeared under Kathy Dent's watch.
She had a very wonderful history. She was charged with two felonies, one for putting out advertising in each and every one of the precincts during an election in paper forms, about an inch thick, a pile for each of the precincts, 180 precincts at the time, and all recommending on the touchscreen ballots that there was nothing wrong with them. And the people were voting on that issue. Well, whether you thought it was nothing wrong, and McClatchy paper put that editorial out, and Kathy Dent dispersed it throughout. That's a felony. That's interfering with an election. And there was another one as well. And in both cases, or in the last case anyway, the one I was referring to first, and that is the McClatchy paper, the Moreland, who was the sitting district attorney, said, well, she took the advice of an attorney. And that was, so therefore she's not at fault. Now, he refused to even bring a misdemeanor count against her, nothing. And when people looked into it, the attorney happened to be her husband. He happens to be an attorney. And that was the advice that she was excused for, from a felony, not a minor thing, Floyd. So this thing has got its abuses everywhere.
We've had our interesting contrast. Here in Manatee County, we had a Republican, Bob Sweat, who was... well loved by both Democrats and Republicans. He made sure that the supervisor of elections was a nonpartisan office. Where in Sarasota, which typically is a little bit more liberal than Manatee County, but Sarasota has a supervisor of elections who is a very partisan supervisor of elections. But back to our topic. There is this idea of an open primary in Florida. The recognition that our political system right now is a failure because we have these extremists elected by what are called super voters. In the political jargon, super voters are people who turn out for all elections. And they basically tend to be the most diehard voters on either party. And they tend to elect people who are just very, very much for what particular platform. On the far right, it's pro-guns, anti-gay, pro-God, pro-war. On the left, it's pro-choice and gun control. And also in favor of rights for the common man, as far as things like minimum wage and workman's compensation and child labor laws and clean air.
A lot of voting issues. Yeah.
But a lot of the issues that we have. Mm-hmm. But there are middle grounds that you can still have clean air and still allow industry to flourish. There are a lot of different middle grounds. You can still have some kind of gun control where you basically will screen people who may be mentally ill and keep them from buying guns and still allow the protection of the Second Amendment.
Well, I think let me touch on that a little bit, because you're raising something I was going to put toward the end of what I was going to talk about today. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. Security of a free state. Now, just what the hell does that mean? And then the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Any part. So, in other words, and how many weapons? Bear arms. How many arms? A well-regulated militia means somebody's going to decide how many arms you're going to have and hold. Are they to be integrated, or is that to be an Amendment 2 Part B, or is that one amendment? It's Amendment 2. It's the Second Amendment. And no one ever mentions regulation. And when we talk about regulating or controlling guns, the first thing that happens, you're not taking my rights away. I had this discussion on Saturday with a fellow that does work for me. I even carry a Confederate flag I have one in my house. Do you have it on your truck? And he says, well, no. I said, well, then, I guess that's all right. It's your right to do that. You've historical peace. Well, it protects your Second Amendment, right? No, it has nothing to do with it. It's got about the war on and protection of slavery through the Confederacy, the standing up. So the excuses that people will use to maintain the history that's been going on in terms of actual behavior is not controlled at all, Floyd. And this Second Amendment was a copy of a protection of gun rights in Switzerland from 1200. That's how far back this amendment comes from. We copied their rules on guns, and each Swiss citizen, Floyd, has a mandate to have a gun in their home, and the one of which the government decides that you have. Now, you can have other guns, but they have to be registered, and you have to show you can use those guns monthly on a required basis and know what you're doing. And that's at all ages from the age of whatever eligibility is in Switzerland, that they're required from 18 on up, let's say, and you have to know you can use that gun and show that you're competent, and you have to prove that you're competent. We have none of these restrictions on people today. I said to my friend, I said, so you, what kind of guns do you want? Well, I have all kinds of guns. Do you want to register them? Well, I would, as it was his response. Well, perhaps. That would be so here you have, he gave me a bit of an opening in the conversation, but he's pretty hard-fisted mentally on this sort of thing. This is what we run into in this country. So now in terms of voting, you're going to find out the issues you're talking about, whether it's gun rights or whatever, control of guns, whatever, where people stand and where the politicians really are, because they can't use the party platform to hide behind, which is what we're going to find out tomorrow night.
And that's what it is. It's a party platform as opposed to a people's platform. And that's what the cool thing about the concept of an open primary will be, that you'll actually have to talk to the average citizen of Florida, not to the people on the far right or the far left. The guns, for instance, I am a Democrat, and I do believe in some kind of gun regulation, but I own guns. I'm not opposed to having people own guns. I would be very upset if the government came and took away my guns. So I'm one of those moderates. I have an in-between position. And at the same token, it's difficult to vote for a Democratic candidate because they tend to run on one thing, wanting to have a lot of regulation, or on the other end, wanting to have no regulation. If you drive a car, which could be a deadly weapon as well, a car requires a license, it requires a registration. There are certain limitations on that. So, but the point is, in the end, if we can elect moderate things. Now, there's a website. It's not a very good website. Especially as a website designer, I'm disappointed in the fact that it does say it's under construction. But it's called allvotersvote.com. Allvotersvote.com.
All one word.
All one word. No mm-hmm. spaces in there.
And all low cap.
It has the wording of this particular amendment that we now have in place in Louisiana, Washington State, and in California, where everyone votes on all candidates, what's called an open primary. There are three amendments circulating right now that I'd like you to consider, if you will, that I think has a value to Florida. One of them is the all voters vote that we would get a chance to vote on and hopefully have a chance to implement here in Florida. The other one is allowing a little bit more discretion for medical marijuana. And those are important. And another one that's just a horrendous law in Florida. The Republicans claim that they're pro-business. But as a businessman...
A joke, folks.
If I was, as a businessman, if I wanted to, and I apologize, there are many Republicans who are pro-business, very much so. But
which,
as a businessman,
which
if I was to put up solar panels in my house, that were very efficient...
Oh, you can't do that, Floyd. You can't do that.
I can put solar panels in my house, but if they were very efficient enough, I could sell the excess electricity to my neighbor.
We got to protect FPL.
I'm not allowed to be in because FPL is a major contributor to campaigns. And as a consequence, it's illegal for me to go into the business of producing electricity for my neighbors. Are using clean electricity, by using solar.
Well, Floyd, you know, it so happens we had a representative for the solar businesses right around here. I can't recall the fellow's name. He was actually in here. But nonetheless, he proposed a whole financing system, basically costing you nothing because of the electricity you save, even with the upfront costs you had to deal with in, say, 5 years. His proposal, I will get his name and put it up later, but was that you had no upfront costs. That's what people are concerned about, Floyd. I had solar for hot water some years ago. Jimmy Carter was in office. That's quite a few years ago. And then Reagan came along and destroyed that in the first 4 years.
That's interesting. Jimmy Carter had solar rebates, the first president to do so. I also bought solar panels for my domestic hot water. And the interesting thing about the solar hot water is those panels produce hotter water than the gas.
It was beautiful.
It's kind of hard to believe that you actually, from the sun, got hotter water than
the
gas.
It's tempting to get into the business. The fellow that was here, I'm going to get his name because he was really good, has been in business since that time, and he never quit. But my problem at the time, I didn't look hard enough, was getting the repairs made for the leaks that were happening.
They can be kind of challenging. They've progressed a while since that time. But what happened, Ronald Reagan, his first official act as President of the United States let's not do that. We don't have...
I said Reckham. I didn't say anything else.
Ronald Reagan, the first official act that he did as President of the United States was to remove the solar panels from the White House. This was a symbol of energy independence back in the 1980s.
So was he saying we should be energy dependent?
Well, that's exactly what he said. He said we should be dependent upon the oil companies and in the end upon the Arabs who finance terrorism through their oil sales.
But Floyd, how do you know he said that?
That's the statement that you make. You remove clean energy from the White House. It's almost like taking the flag off the White House, saying that we don't feel that the American symbol...
Should have put the Saudi flag up.
Well, in a sense, he could have. He basically did. And the same thing with the Bush family.
I wonder if he would have gotten elected to a second term had he done that.
Anyway.
Well, these are shoulda, woulda.
I think that Ronald Reagan had some good qualities to him. He was a very personable individual. And let's take a gamble and put our caller on the air. Welcome to the Morning Edge. Name? What's your name, please?
Who's calling?
Good morning, Floyd J. Welcome back.
Thank you.
And good morning, August.
Good morning, Mr. Lawrence. What can I do for you?
I would like to comment on the topics that you were talking about.
Oh, thank you. Welcome.
That would be good. Or you can add a topic if you like.
Well, thank you also. In regards to energy independence or savings and so forth, and it being on the left and the right, the left for, the right against, I'd like to bring up something current, which would be the XL pipeline, okay? Where the left, a large portion of the left, which would be labor, the unions, are fourscore for the XL pipeline for energy independents. How can it be that a large portion of the left before the XL pipeline and you and your ilk against it?
Let me start.
All right, I have other questions.
One at a time.
Go ahead. I'm going to answer this one.
We'll give you a chance to ask the one question because we had a topic here. But thank you. We'll give you a chance to answer your question. It's a wonderful question, Lawrence.
Well, so I say. In any event, the ilk, if you like to refer people kindly, don't want Canadian oil coming through down to Houston to be cleaned up by the Koch brothers, who were the primary pushers. It so happens that the labor unions, the ones that are for this, will somewhat benefit in terms of jobs. I'm not sure how many they think they're going to get, but that has been the argument. Now, bringing a pipeline through the Ogallala, whatever that's called, Ogallala, reservoirs up there in Nevada and Nebraska is the problem, the danger to that. The moving of this oil, not for this country's use, but for the import, for the export to other countries after it's cleaned up, because it's the most vile of all the oils out there. It's like liquid tar. I think is not understanding the problem. The fact that people on the left support it, as you put it, is inarguable. That's true. So what does that make the argument? Better or worse? I really don't understand the point. I argue against it, no matter whether... I think having oil come out of North America and be exported, I guess to send the worst of it to some other country, but using the Koch brothers to be the filter of that oil is an economic benefit to the Koch brothers and not much else. That would be my answer.
And let me kind of add into that. I think there's a large part of the population that would like to have, we all want to have energy independence. Energy independence, but it does not mean taking this oil and starting to ship it overseas to other countries. We're actually starting to become an exporter of some of the oil we have. There's now the desire of taking our national strategic oil reserve and selling it off. And it just doesn't seem to make sense to take away our protection and our reserve and sell that away. But that would give us a little bit, it's something like a few $1 billion, enough to pay for a couple bombers, is what that would do.
Well, it's a war issue. So now to the next question.
Well, let's look at the rest of the issue. But part of it is, a lot of Americans would like to have clean energy and not be polluting our skies, and trying to emphasize the idea of having renewable energy that's clean, that's not going to risk our nature, our nature centers that we have in our lakes and our clean water. And I had the fortune of being able to travel to France this past month, and it was interesting. On the railroad coming through the Channel from England to France, I just saw windmill after windmill after windmill, these energy turbines spinning beautifully and generating clean energy for the citizens of France. We could do stuff like that. Maybe wind, maybe wave action, maybe solar. There are energy alternatives we could do without threatening our environment to make us independent. Israel gives all kinds of incentives to have solar panels on their roofs. Many people in Israel, a majority of them have solar panels on their roofs because of the fact that they don't want to support the Arab nations through purchasing oil and give more money to people who have financed terrorism.
So I think you can make the proposals on the alternative side. Why do we want to make the argument about maintaining more oil at any and all cost? And that is what I think the Keystone Pipeline proposes. And the fact, the argument that some of the, in the on the left side support it, whether they do or they don't, it's not arguable in terms of alternative ways to do things. It just says we've got this extra supply. when you had the excess supply from all of the fracking back earlier in this year and all the employment going on around fracking, what happened to the oil price? It dropped. Who dropped it? Saudi Arabia. Why did they drop it? They wanted to break those people out of that $100 a barrel thing because they have $10 a barrel cost. They've been manipulating the price of oil. They are our tax man through oil, and our dependents from the tax man, the Saudi Arabians, the same people who took after and did 9/11 for us, not great friends. Roger Cohen has an editorial I'll be reading, comments on that. This is the argument is really what Floyd's talking about, the alternative to oil. Whether or not Keystone goes through or not, I think Hillary showed her equivocal nature by saying she would hold that off till she became president, answering that question that you're asking. So let's go to Lawrence is next.
Right now we have a commercial break.
Oh, we'll go to the commercial? Yeah. Okay, sure.
It's time for our break, and we'll be back shortly.
Sarasota is home to a true gift, the Posture Clinic of Sarasota, with Dr. Mark D'Amato, 4450 South Tamiami Trail. Dr. D'Amato is a veterinary chiropractor, treating horses, dogs, or your favorite four-legged friend. First and foremost, animal chiropractic care is not intended to replace traditional veterinary medicine. Complementary care is a type of care that works with your vet, and certainly not instead of them. To find out more information, call Dr. Mark D'Amato at 941-927-7009. That's 941-927-7009. Oh, and by the way, Dr. Mark treats two-legged patients, too. This part of the Morning Edge is brought to you by Callens, Little, and Delgado, practicing personal injury, criminal defense, and family law. Call 941-749-1446. 941-749-1446.
I may be crazy, but it just may be a lunatic you're looking for. Turn out the light.
And yes, I may be crazy, but I do think that we could have clean air and still have energy at the same time. I don't think those are mutually exclusive, and that's the point. We do want to have energy independence, but we want to protect our country. We protect it not just for our freedoms, not just for our rights, not just our citizens, but we also want to protect the environment. But some people have a different philosophy. They're interested in protecting their wallets. As much green as they can get. Not the green of the trees, not the green of the grass.
Without getting too moralistic, Floyd. Come on.
But Lawrence, you had a second question.
Yeah, your second question,
so,
Lawrence.
So welcome back.
Are you still there?
Yes, I am. Thank you. I'd like to add to the last question. First of all, you keep mentioning the Koch brothers as if they're some evil entity.
No, the Koch brothers own the refining down in Houston. So
Right. What about Tom Steyer, August?
What about Tom Steyer?
I think that he's on the same level, if not more, than the Koch brothers. Why do you always neglect Tom Steyer, who is directly involved in the...
Okay, I
don't know what the question is. Let's see if we can clear up what the question is. I'm not sure. What's that have to do with the point?
What he's trying to do is look at a person who's on the Democratic side.
I don't care. Let him do it. He's a conservative, so let's go. I want him to say it.
We have a choice. We can make this the Lawrence show.
No. It's a fair thing to do. Go ahead and make your point, Lawrence.
I'm trying to.
I know. What's Tom Steyer have to do with this?
Yeah, he is on par with the Koch brothers. You never talk about
on
Tom
par.
Steyer.
That's right.
Bias is obvious.
Well, now we're getting into a dead end. I ask a very, very specific part, and you're denying you want to give it. So one more shot. Okay. Answer the question I ask.
Yeah, just we're having just a civil conversation here. Among friends, Lawrence. Yeah. So tell us very quickly who Tom Steyer was, and then we'll go on with your show, okay?
I say that you do not know who Tom Steyer is, so and you're afraid
that's not
to
the
bring
question.
It up.
What? Tell us who he is.
No, that's okay, Marcus. You're obviously not aware.
All right.
Okay, goodbye,
it.
Lawrence.
Goodbye.
I don't know who the guy is either.
What's so difficult about clarifying the thing? Even if I knew who he was, yeah. I'd still want to know that Lawrence knew, and obviously Lawrence doesn't know.
I don't know who he is.
He just said he's a Democrat, and he gives out money to Democrats,
well,
I suppose.
That's the assumption that
sure.
I have.
Well, that's all you're left with. Yeah, of course.
And
let's keep on this subject in another way.
Okay.
We've got an article by Roger Cohen that's quite interesting. Congress should back an imperfect Iranian deal. Levin's deep dig questioning, Carl Levin, that is, should also peruse a letter from the former. let me go on down. This is by Roger Cohen. Now the Saudis are American allies. Iran is and will, for the foreseeable future, remain a hostile power. But what have our allies done for us of late? Saudi in particular. Promoted through madrasas and other means, the conservative Wahhabi Islam, whose fierce anti-Western teachings provided the context for the emergence of Al-Qaeda, the Taliban, and most recently Islamic states, the ISA, or ISIL. Manipulated oil prices, folks. They're the ones who turn the tap on your gas price. most recently down in order to undermine Americans' liberating energy revolution through an attempt to make shake oil companies uncompetitive. Shunned Obama's attempts to reassure Sunni monarchies that the Iranian deal would not mean diminished powers, and all of this, of course, from the country that furnished the manpower for 9/11. The Saudis are in lockstep with Israel on hostility to the Iranian deal, but are no friends of Israel. Their goal, despite Americans' dwindling dependence on the Kingdom of Oil, is to preserve a Middle Eastern status quo that limits American strategic options, including the possibility that Iran and the United States might find common ground in combating the Islamic State. And it goes on more than that. And you know what that, and Carly Fiorina this morning was asked, how do you get rid of the Islamic State? She went through, you've got to support Saudi Arabia in the context with Jordan and some others in Syria. You've got to support that. And you've got to give them arms and so on and so on. This lady who wrecked Hewlett Packard long enough to barely come back is a candidate that she didn't get on the platform, but she's really an amazing example of following the Bush line on oil. But the question that Thomas Friedman asks is the funny one, and he proposes this for tomorrow night, Floyd. If I've got to ask one question of the presidential aspirants for Thursday's Fox Republican debate, it should be this. As part of a 1982 transportation bill, President Ronald Reagan agreed to boost the then 4 cents a gallon gasoline tax to 9 cents, almost more than double it, saying that when we first built our highways, we paid for them with the gas tax. It was a fair concept then, and it is today. Do you believe that Ronald Reagan was right or wrong? And would you agree to raise the gasoline tax by 5 cents a gallon today so that we can pay for our highway bill, which is now stalled in Congress over funding? Well, they passed a short-term three-month extension. The gasoline tax is currently 18.4 cents a gallon and was last hiked by Bill Clinton in 1993 after a raise by George Bush in 1990. Average gasoline prices have fallen roughly a dollar a gallon in the last year, so a 5 cent increase would hardly be noticed. No matter.
It would be noticed. You could use that for the infrastructure, for the bridges, the highways.
I think what he's saying is not that.
I understand.
Its use is obvious, yes, that's right. Would hardly be noticed. No matter, the Senate last week passed a six-year transportation bill, unlike the House, but funded it for only 3 years. And because the Senate Republican refused to pay for any of it with a gas tax, they raised the funds instead in part by selling oil from our strategic petroleum reserve. That's how you pay for a gas.
And that's just the wrong way. It makes us less independent. It takes away some of our protection. It's an oil reserve.
Well, he goes on and says, which is our insurance, which is what you just said, against another oil crisis. I'm not making this up. Republicans have yet to weigh in on this, and goes on. But the point is, people who care about this country and future, and less about the future filling of wallets on the part of the very wealthy, especially in the oil industry, are really unpatriotic at this point in time, Floyd. I think I'm just going to make it a declarative statement.
Well, I feel the same way, too. They're more interested in the size of their wallet than in the progress and the protection of the United States. And that's what we're looking at. Again,
for any new callers, let me interject here a bit. 941-745-1490. Let me repeat that. 941-745-1490. If you have any comments or contributions, call us, please. I've got to use it, John.
Yeah, so that is one of the issues. Is it moralistic to be patriotic? I think if you care about your environment, if you care about your country, if you care about its safety, that is something that it's worthwhile to be interested in renewable fuels that won't necessarily harm your environment. There's been a lot of controversy over fracking, a lot of controversy over the oil pipeline, but there are things that are safer. Every particular form of energy may have its drawbacks, but there are things that are safer than nuclear plants, which we had a problem with in Japan. There was a major devastation when their nuclear plant ran into major problems a few years ago, and they're still seeing the fallout of that, literally. So if you have a question on energy, you want to weigh in, give us a call at 941-745-1490. The conversation began, though, with the issue of voting. When we vote for candidates, do we want a candidate that's going to be all on one side, a tree hugger, or a candidate all on the other side, a person interested in just given profits to the oil companies? Interesting that many years, companies like Exxon were given multi-billion dollar subsidies. They were basically given corporate welfare. We were given
welfare is a bad thing. Well, we can't have welfare.
Up to $10 billion a year as subsidies to our oil companies. $10 billion a year. We were given a few million a year for alternative energy resources, but given up to $10 billion a year for oil subsidies. It just doesn't make sense.
Well, sense is your point of view. If you support the oil industry the way which we continue to and have done, then it's, and you're making money off the oil industry in terms of your stock holdings and so forth, whatever you're holding, then it makes sense. But if you care about your nation, that's the question, isn't it? I mean, do you really care about your nation if you're doing that? And its future.
And that's the thing. You're looking at your future, your children's future. Why is it that countries like China or countries like Israel or countries like France or Germany can outproduce us when it comes to alternative energy? That's an important question.
Well, let's put a couple of caveats here. France and England and Germany, France being about 60 to 70 million people, has about 9 or 10 million Muslims. And Germany, which is a 90 million population, and they have probably 5 million Turks living there, is energy independent more than any other country in the world, and the greatest exporter in terms of industry of any country in the world, proportion to their size. And they have everything unionized, unions sit on their boards and so on. But their wind power and their solar power and so forth constitute, I think, around 40% of all their energy right now, Germany. And in France, about 60% of their energy is nuclear. So they've gotten wind and alternatives. So you could be inadvertently arguing for alternative fuel in terms of nuclear where France is concerned, because it's an old the train you rode on that came through France rode on nuclear power for the most part, electric from nuclear.
So it's interesting. Yes, Germany has become a major exporter. It was kind of cool going to the wax museum, and they had these wax images of Putin, Obama, Merkel.
And now you must have been in Paris.
Yeah, we were in Paris.
Yeah.
But the person who was Sarkozy, the former premier of France, Merkel, the head of Germany, it was interesting. We were in France, but the person that people wanted to pose with the most was Angela Merkel from France. She's not from France, from Germany. In France, they wanted to pose with the German prime minister.
She's done more good to unite those two enemies than the French were hated by the Germans, and the French hated the Germans in return for a long, long time, and right through World War II. It was until Merkel came in and made Kohl before her and others really didn't make Brandeis and so forth, didn't make the outreach to France and the unity. France and Germany really are economically more and more a single power, and so that's roughly 150 to 200 million people as the future goes, who will have more and more weight. And England's got to get off the fence, or they're going to get split apart, with Scotland going one way and other parts of the country going another, British Isles being a forgotten thing, and London being an island unto itself, having the banking system, the biggest banking system in that part of the world, including Germany and France. But the points, what's happening over there with the handling of Greece and the debt and all of that is quite interesting. Yeah, I'm a lover of France in particular. They are they provided our Statue of Liberty. Most of the bridges built in the area of New York and that whole area were designed by French designers. A lot of the Brooklyn Bridge, for one, and others, whatever they name it, it was not designed by us. The cantons on those bridges are unbeatable. They're hard to measure out, and they master past our infrastructure's ability to sustain it. The fact is, we don't appreciate our real allies. We turn around and we make friends with the Saudi Arabians through the Bush family in particular, and all the way back to Prescott Bush, Floyd. Prescott Bush and the Nazis and the Saudis were all in bed to destroy the Jews in particular. They loved the idea that the Jews would be decimated, which is what the Nazis were up to. Of course, the Nazis wanted the oil, and the Saudis knew it. They played the oil tap game for way too long. They do the tap dance on your prices. So if you want to take away their power, you take the taxing away from them. You raise the price up like John Anderson, a former Republican who became an independent at the time of Reagan, wanted to raise it 50 cents in 1980 per gallon. And he was defeated. He took 9% of the vote away from Carter, which may have swung the election to Reagan. Like people don't talk about John Anderson very often. That was a rigged deal there too. I can go into that someday. I worked on his campaign in a short way as a Republican. So the whole business of what the Republican Party has become, a stooge of the oil industry and a stooge of the tin hats, the Tea Party people, it's pretty pathetic.
Well, I hate to label and smear the whole Republican Party that way. It's the primary that was
when you have people say one rotten apple. Well, you've got 25% of the Republican Party are the crazies for crying out loud.
Going back to the initial question we had, this open primary, that's what happens. You on both sides, you tend to elect.
Well, where's the Tea Party? Where's the Tea Party and the Democrats?
As far as the Radical Party, well, the Tea Party is really an unusual phenomenon. You don't really have a strong third party since the Bull Moose Party back in the early 1900s.
The Republicans were the first independent party under Lincoln. It split between the Whigs and the Democrats. The Southern Democrats mainly were the Democrats of the time. And the Republicans became the Northern Liberals at that time, and Lincoln made it so. And so you've had these this is how you got to supposedly one of the two greatest leaders of this country was Lincoln and FDR. They put Teddy's face on the mountains because he saved so much of the land for the for wilderness, and now the Republicans are going to give it back to the oil industry, and they're very, and state by state, every Republican leader out there, they want to take it away from the federal government and hand it over for exploitation. So I think you're right, the independent party that comes in right now in Sarasota County, I know in Manatee it's similar. You've got more independents or people non-voting by party than you have of each and every one of the party groups. There's about 43% Republican in Sarasota, 32% Democrat, and the balance is all independents. So you have a situation of splitting county by county, state by state, throughout the entire nation. So we may have a caller and we may not. So it's...
Okay, hi. I'll listen in a second, okay?
Do we have a caller?
Welcome. Yeah. This is the other Lawrence. Welcome to the Morning Edge.
This is
good morning, Jim.
Good morning, Lawrence. What's up?
I have a Family Tree magazine. It shows the Bush family. You know, the marriages back in history.
Sure.
And Prescott was Jewish. That's why I can't understand why would he be against his own people.
What do you mean?
He's Jewish blood.
Oh, you said he was Jewish. You said, I thought you said he was George. I misunderstood you.
Jewish.
Okay. Prescott was Jewish. It so happens that I think it was either the father or the mother of Hitler was Jewish as well. So.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
So you have these paradoxes, people rejecting certain lineage, it was looked down upon, whatever. It's an interesting phenomenon. So what else did you learn from that?
That's it. You taught me another history lesson.
Oh, I'm sorry about that.
You're great.
Well, thank you.
You guys are great. Well, thank you.
Thank you, Lawrence.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
I never heard that before, that Prescott Bush was Jewish.
That's a new one, yeah.
Just doing a quick search on that, there's numerous articles about how the Bush family made his fortune from the Nazis, and
why don't you read some of that, Floyd?
And Prescott Bush, the grandfather of the current president, went beyond disdain for the Jews and discriminatory practices. But again, it's internet information. I kind of wonder how
garbage in, garbage out.
But again, this article is Bush and the Jews. And I don't really know enough about that. I hate to just start reading something from some of the sources you can trust.
What's that again?
Some sources you can trust, but this particular source,
I'm not sure about.
I'm not sure, but I never.
Well, that's been a long-held piece of knowledge. The same thing with respect.
Now, I know that he had a disdain for Jews. But was Prescott Bush a Jew?
Oh, I don't know that.
I've never heard that before.
The other one who, the questionable behavior, all because he made money off of alcohol, and that was John Kennedy's father, Joe Kennedy. Mm-hmm. And Joe Kennedy Jr. would have been the guy that they would have run first for president, but he was killed in World War II in a plane crash. He was a fighter pilot or a bomber pilot, I'm not sure what. And his early the Kennedy money was all from alcohol, and the Bush money's all been from oil and making deals internationally and so on. So when you have these big families coming from these special interests, somewhat criminal in one way and somewhat criminal in another, you have a situation where the business of making money is more important than the future of the country. Do we have another caller?
Yeah. Well, the other caller was making the point that we had a number of leaders in America who were racist as well, people who we admire today in today's context. That's also, the caller brought up an interesting point there, that as we go through our history, we have people whose positions change, just on gay rights, or black rights, or civil rights, voting rights. There's been a number of changes through history as far as what's acceptable.
So there is an argument that's running around right now. I just heard a conversation on this just recently, and that is that basically the country was founded on the supremacy of white over black, and that blacks were inferior people. They were the people of mud and so on. So whatever you did with them, they were worthy slaves, and we could make money off of them. And we did. And eight of the presidents of the early presidents were slaveholders. Four of those presidents were presidents active at the time as presidents. They believed that whites were superior and blacks were inferior. So this essential racism started early on with Jefferson and Washington in particular. You know, you can find all kinds of the intermarriage between whites and blacks has been going on for some time as well, and the mixing of marriage and mixing of names and misogynation that the South always yelled about all the time. was at hand all the time. They were yelling about it, and the religionists, the Baptists in particular, supported this phony kind of religious tie-in to race. But money was the key. It's always follow the money, and you'll find out where things are going. And the Bush family's been tied, got their nose up the Saudis' butt, and it's been that way forever. And you're going to bring a Bush in again. And Carla Fiorino, frankly, is loving that idea of being the the vice president, presidential candidate for George Jeb Bush, whatever you want to call him, but John Ellis Bush. But this may be undone by a little Trump. He's going to stomp on this nonsense. And maybe the Republican Party, with your idea, Floyd, of open primaries, will finally become again the party of Abraham Lincoln, which I think would be fantastic. And this would be a hopeful sign. I think it's the best kind of thing we can have right now. This business of denying over half of the voters a chance to vote a lot of times in these elections, like was done in Sarasota and is being done all over the country in different ways, is a real shame, and people should look at that. The redistricting right now, Floyd, is being reordered of the entrusted
Bill Galvano. Mm-hmm. Bill Galvano will be in charge of it. He's our local.
But they were doing it in secret, and the Supreme Court ordered them to open it up and let everybody see what they were doing. They were doing it supposedly the way they were supposed to do it again, like we trusted them before. Not being trusted now. Your legislature in the state of Florida, untrustworthy.
We passed the background. We passed an amendment saying we would not have gerrymandering, which is creating districts to the benefit of politicians as opposed to the benefit of voters. The districts were created to ensure that certain people, certain parties would be elected. And what happened is the state Florida, we get a caller coming in, basically created those again to once again ensure Republican elections. Caller, you're live on the Morning Edge.
Is Hillary Clinton trustworthy?
Oh, well, we always find out by voting, don't we? She has the same numbers, by the way, that since Lawrence brought that up, that Bill Clinton had in his first term, as far as trustworthy and so on. So I don't think that's going to bring her down. I think actually Bernie Sanders is going to have a better chance of making trouble for her. He's only 6 percentage points behind Hillary right now.
Well, Bernie Sanders is interesting. He's an independent. He has almost no charisma. He's a funny-looking white guy with very gray hair going bald.
He's 72 years old. He's the same age as Joe Biden.
Yeah, he's old. But
he's
independent.
Everything old is new again, Floyd.
He's an independent, and he's drawn.
Well, he's a socialist, don't you know?
he's attracting voters because he offers the alternative. And that's kind of a cool thing.
Yeah.
So we're maybe this idea of independent voters can have an impact upon people in Florida. Maybe we will vote for this this particular amendment.
Well, I think it's certainly a change in the right direction, Floyd. I'm hoping for it. They've done it in California. They're going to do it in New York, and it's a much needed thing. So
the site is allvotersvote.com. I hope you'll consider that. Take a look at it. There's also the medical marijuana amendment. There's also the amendment for allowing people like you to put solar photovoltaics on your rooftop and sell it to your neighbor if you want. Why should that be illegal? Why should it be illegal to promote alternative clean energy? So think about it. I hope you found parts of our show interesting. We'll see you back here on Friday.
And I think Dennis Mealy will be here, but last week he had something come up. He would have been here otherwise. He apologized for not being here. So hopefully Friday we'll get to talk to Dennis.
You're listening to 1490 AM, WWPR, Reaganville, Sarasota, Tampa Bay.
Friday night I crashed your party. Saturday I said I'm sorry. Sunday came.